All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
Good afternoon, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, CW2 type helicopter pilot, Vietnam, 1969, a century and a half ago. Seems like it now. Anyway, we want to welcome you to our program today. We're very honored to have you listening to us. You can give us a call during the program at 734-822-1600. I suggest that if you want to hear what else is going on Veterans Radio recently, you can follow us on Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter, you can go to our website, veteransradio.net, listen to many of our older programs on our archives, or also to our podcasts. And I think our podcasts are getting very, very interesting. Jim Falzone, one of our partners, has been doing these little 20-minute segments, usually once a week, and putting them up there on our podcast. Gets into a lot more detail about things that might be going on at the VA, or some amazing stories of some of these veterans that are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. And in fact, he asked me to let everybody know that there is an event coming up, and I think this is kind of cool. It says, a Wounded Warrior is bringing yoga to Canton, Michigan, to a park. And I said, what's this all about? Well, it turns out that Dan Nevins, who is a motivational speaker and a Wounded Warrior double amputee, has been using yoga as a way of helping himself get back into society and getting everything straight in his head and his body. Of course, I can't imagine what it would be like to do that. But he credits the practice of yoga for turning his life around after losing his legs in Iraq. He's a professional speaker. He's going to be in Canton, and I have to find a date here again because I had it here a second ago. There we go. Yoga in the Park to Benefit the Wounded Warrior Project is going to be on Saturday, July 30th at 9 a.m. in Heritage Park. And it's going to be led by Dan Nevins, a nationally recognized wounded warrior featured on NBC News. You need to register for this event. As a matter of fact, there are tickets that are for sale, and you can participate. I'm guessing that they're going to, Dan will probably give some sort of motivational speech, and then I think he's going to take you through a little yoga session. So I think that might be kind of fun for those that can do that kind of thing. But you need to get more information about that to call this number. Get your pencil out, as Bob always says, 734-394-5360. 734-394-5360, and that's Yoga in the Park, as they say, with Dan Nevins. Let us know how it goes. It sounds kind of interesting. I don't know what I'm going to be doing on July 30th. Maybe I'll end up doing a little yoga. You never know. But that's one story. The other story that I wanted to mention today is our good friend Charlie Kettles. I don't know what you folks are going to be doing tomorrow Monday, around 11 o'clock Eastern time. Charlie's going to be at the White House, and he's going to be receiving his Medal of Honor. And so we're all excited, of course, from the local area, and many people are going to Washington as part of his little entourage. And so we're very excited for Charlie Kettles to receive his Medal of Honor for what he did in Vietnam way back in 1967, when he pulled out 40 wounded people as a helicopter pilot with the 121st Aviation Company. I guess I better put that in there. Charlie's a good guy. It's a great opportunity for his recognition. And, of course, he received the Distinguished Service Cross for his acts of valor back in 1967, and that has been upgraded. And we want to thank the local congressmen and congresswomen, especially Debbie Dingell, for getting involved and helping with that upgrade, and Bill Volano from the Veterans History Project in Ypsilanti for kind of being a spearhead to get that done. So tomorrow around 11 o'clock, I would guess it's going to be on television somewhere, at least on the local news, probably on the noon edition. So check it out, and you'll be able to say, hey, I know that guy. And there's going to be a local reception here in August, on August 13th, out at the Yankee Air Museum. And for more information, we'll get that out to you as we go along. But it is going to be a public recognition of Lieutenant Colonel Charles Kettles and his Medal of Honor for what he did in Vietnam. And speaking of the Yankee Air Museum, I guess I should get this last little plug in before we move on. Thunder Over Michigan is coming to Michigan again. It's kind of redundant, isn't it? But we are. And so Thunder over Michigan, August 20th and 21st, 2016. It's going to be out in Willow Run. For those of you who have been there before, you know it's going to be a great show. Airplanes, helicopters, bombers, stunt planes, you name it, something to do with aviation, it'll be out there. I'm looking at the picture here. There's going to be Russian helicopters. There's going to be all kinds of jets, and I think it's going to be a great show. I know it's been very exciting every time we've ever been out there. So put it on your calendar, Thunder over Michigan, August 20th and 21st, 2016. Hope to see you out at that one as well. Well, busy day. Yesterday at Comerica Park in downtown Detroit, there was a job fair. And joining me right now on the line is one of the people that was one of the sponsors of that job fair, and that is Ken Barrett. And Ken Barrett is with General Motors. And Ken, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, hey, it's great to be on the show, Dale.
Thank you very much for coming on. And I wanted to talk, if you can kind of give us a little recap of what happened yesterday at a Hire the Heroes program at Comerica Park. And I was just talking to someone that kind of wandered through the studio a little bit earlier who was down there yesterday, and he said it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a great event for us. We had over 100 employers that were out there, and we had over 460 veterans that signed up for it. So certainly the largest one we've held yet. They had the opportunity to get prior to in the morning earlier. They kind of went through resume building, networking, those types of things to kind of position vets to be in the best possible position to help transition, or if you've been out for a while, to try to look for another job. And then from there, they had kind of career, you know, a career fair where each of the employers had a booth down there. Many of them were hiring on the spot, and certainly General Motors was there along with the UAW where we had opportunities available for many vets that were looking for employment.
Well, it sounds like a great program, and I understand that these events are going on around the country. Is that true?
Yes, that's true, Dale. We've got we're one of the people that are on. It's called the Veteran Employment Advisory Council that the Chamber of Commerce has set up, and many employers are on that. We obviously sit on that particular council, and the chamber basically has a series of Hiring Our Heroes job fairs all around the country. And certainly GM partners with them where we have the opportunity, where we have a large concentration in a particular state or around a manufacturing facility or certainly here in Southeast Michigan.
Okay, so let's take a look at what General Motors is doing with your Veterans Initiative. Can you describe that to our audience?
Well, yes, certainly. I mean, I think for us is first and foremost, we want to be able to make sure that if we have veterans that are transitioning, and that there's a fit with respect to anything on our salary side for General Motors or, and the UAW has been proactive as well for any of our hourly types of jobs, to be able to make sure that those veterans are in the pool of candidates that we're looking at. So being able to make sure that we have a high-touch kind of arrangement where we try to make sure that we're able to see specifically what these vets have done, we understand how qualified and what they bring to the table, but being able to make sure we know from whatever their MOS may be, but being able to get that translated into the job needs that we have, be able to do that. Also, what we do is once we do onboard veterans, and I would tell you we have over 12,000 veterans at General Motors today, we have a very robust employee resource group that kind of works with the vets to be able to make sure that that transition is as easy as possible, but to be able to also help them navigate maybe a new environment that's different from the military. We also, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't mention, since I am General Motors here, we have a very lucrative GM military discount program. We do a lot with respect to that. So anybody looking for a Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, or a Cadillac, certainly we have a military discount that we're very proud of. So kind of working with that constituency to be able to help sell cars. So really all-encompassing, we do a lot there. And then there's another piece of this where we actually do a lot with our the wounded warriors out there, so our wounded veterans, and GMC has been big with building for America's bravest. So, you know, GMC, it's called enlist to unlist, and basically what we do with that program is we have catastrophically injured veterans, those who are triple or quadruple amputee, be be able to build smart homes for them. So all our GMC dealers, each person who buys a GMC vehicle can actually make a donation. The dealership will match it, and General Motors will match that. So we're really trying to get these guys that have given so much, get them off that list and get them a smart home. So those are just some of the initiatives, Dale, but I would tell you we do quite a bit.
It sounds. That's an amazing program, the GMC program. I had not heard of that one before, and I'm grateful that to have you on the program to talk about it. I understand that you are a veteran as well.
Yes, I spent 28 years in the Navy, so it's great to be here in Southeast Michigan now and be at General Motors, but I spent the majority of my lifetime in the Navy.
We don't have anybody. Well, we do have Navy. Toward the end of the program, we're going to have a submariner on the program, so you'll have to stick around and tune in when he talks about his experiences of being in a submarine. Ken Barrett with General Motors, I want to thank you so very much for being on Veterans Radio. Is there a particular website or a phone number that our listeners could go to if they were looking for a job or help in transitioning?
Yeah, we'd be able to just go right to our GM careers page. So I believe it's gmcareers.com, and certainly for military discount, it's just gmmilitarydiscount.com. And I guess the last one would be for Building for America's Bravest is ourbravest.org.
Our greatest. Okay. Tell me about that car discount again. Is that for current veterans or all veterans?
Well, as of right now, it's just kind of within 1 year of a transition out of the military. So right now it's for active duty retirees. And then we have certain times of the year, like actually it just ended, but we opened it up to all veterans at various times of the year. The last time we did it, we had it in the month of May and June. So if you're a veteran who's been out for more than a year, then certainly keep in tune to that. We try to be able to get communication out so they know that it's open to all vets. So okay. At varying phases throughout the year, we actually do that. So.
Okay. Well, make sure you let us know because I've only been out of the service for 40-some-odd years now. So, and I'm always trying to find a deal if I can find one.
All right.
Especially on a good American-made car. We always like those.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for being on the program, and I encourage our audience to check out General Motors. It's great for what you're doing for veterans and for the active duty military as well, and I really want to find out more about this GMC program. So thank you very much again.
All right. Thank you, Dale.
All right. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Okay, you too.
All right. Well, hey, that's kind of cool. General Motors, I did not know that they had all these programs going for veterans, and so we encourage everybody in our audience, if you're interested, just go to, it says careers.gm.com, and then there's an arrow that will take you to a veterans program, and they've got a veteran job mission, our veterans and GM, and the other program about the building houses for these traumatically injured veterans. I think that's an amazing program. That's something I really always wanted to be involved in myself. I am not a very good person, but with tools and stuff, but I can hit nails. I'm very good at hitting nails. So I'm figuring that maybe somebody will ask me to volunteer and I'll jump up and do that for them. Well, we're going to take a real quick break right now, and we're going to come back. We're going to be talking with Buddy to Buddy representative Stephanie Zarb, and who's an Air Force veteran, so it's kind of cool. But we're going to talk about Buddy to Buddy, and you're going to see how this organization truly does help veterans with their transition. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio. Semper Paravis, that's the Coast Guard theme. I'm going to be kind of playing all the different themes here, and I apologize to my guests because I had already picked the tune I was going to play before we got her on the program. But joining me right now on Veterans Radio is Stephanie Zarb, Air Force veteran from the Buddy to Buddy program here in Michigan. Stephanie, welcome.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I really do appreciate it today.
All right. So you're not mad at me for playing that song?
No, not at all. In fact, Buddy to Buddy, we've been around since 2009. And since that time, we've trained over 300 veterans through our program. And we have never been able to get a Coast Guard volunteer for the program. So I'm hoping maybe that'll be our recruiting pitch for today. If there's a Coast Guard veteran out there that after listening wants to get involved, boy, we'd love to have you in our volunteer corps.
That's very true. I'm trying to think. I only know two or three Coast Guard veterans myself. And so we're going to, this is a recruitment call here. And folks up there, we need a Coast Guard veteran in the Buddy to Buddy program. So Stephanie, tell me about this Buddy to Buddy program. What is it?
Sure. So we got started back in 2009. The University of Michigan was given a rather large grant from something called Welcome Back Veterans, which is a partnership between the McCormick Foundation and Major League Baseball Charities. And they were given the money with the specific purpose of finding new and innovative ways to reach veterans and to do something to try and promote military mental health and wellness. And so the University of Michigan received that grant and really wanted to do something amazing with it. And believe it or not, it was a partnership between the University of Michigan, Michigan State University, and the Michigan Army National Guard. So if you can just picture for a minute getting folks from all those organizations in the same room, thank goodness it wasn't football season or maybe we wouldn't have gotten off the ground. But what they discovered, and I think most of us that are veterans, this makes a lot of sense too, is it's not that there aren't a lot of resources out there for veterans, you know, between the VA and the state systems, and your county government actually has a lot of programs for veterans. And there's over 450 nonprofits here in Michigan that are dedicated to helping veterans. The problem is that veterans are usually very reluctant to ask for help. We tend to be quite structured in our thinking. And even when a veteran is willing to ask for help, navigating that system can just be a real nightmare, and it's very difficult to do, especially when you're having a hard time yourself. Whether you're struggling just with transition issues, bigger mental health issues, that's not really the time when you want to be trying to figure out how to argue with the VA or anything like that. So Buddy to Buddy, the thought process was that the people that veterans are most likely to talk to are other veterans. And so if we could train a bunch of them in how to navigate that system and send them out into the communities to go find veterans and help them get connected into these systems of care. And we started working primarily with the Michigan Army National Guard as they were returning from deployment. And then back in 2013, we really expanded the program and we said, you know, it's open to anyone. So any veteran, any era of service, any character of discharge, peacetime, wartime, combat vet, it doesn't matter if you've ever worn the uniform of this country and you need help figuring out if you're eligible for the VA or if your home's in foreclosure or if you're looking for help with employment, legal, it really doesn't matter what it is. Give us a call. We'll pair you up with a veteran in your local area who's trained to deal with those things and just try to help you get you back up on your feet.
This is another way for older veterans to interact with the younger veterans. And I think, that, as you mentioned earlier, the idea of being able to talk to a veteran who's maybe walked down that path themselves should be helpful, I would think.
It's pretty amazing. Sometimes it's just sort of the advantage of having life experience that ends up helping folks out. So sometimes we do connect people into, you know, specific veteran resources. But we had a situation earlier this week with a gentleman who was a veteran and his house was in foreclosure. And we had a volunteer within our volunteer corps that worked for H&R Block for a really long time, really understood sort of that whole side of things just from virtue of what he'd done in his professional life. And we were able to pair the two of them together. And he was actually able to help him get his house out of foreclosure, not through a veteran program, but just, you know, through his knowledge and his understanding of property taxes and things that I actually don't understand myself. So it's been amazing to see connections like that get made.
I just think that is a very interesting program, and I know that you, when we were talking earlier, you had mentioned that you were sponsored by the McCormick Foundation and Major League Baseball, but that some of this money has gone away.
So we've been very fortunate, and the McCormick Foundation and Major League Baseball Charities still fund some of our MSPAN programs. Mm-hmm. MSPAN is the bigger organization within the University of Michigan that I work for. We've also been very lucky to have funding come from all different kinds of sources. We have funding from Michigan Veteran Affairs Agency, and then we've been funded at different times through different programs in the VA, so the VA Office of Mental Health. Most recently, we were funded by VISN 11. As many of your listeners, I'm sure, know, VISN 11 and VISN 10 have merged together. And sort of as a result of that merger, we've actually lost some of our funding for the coming year. So
what was that again, VISN 10 and VISN 11?
VISN 10 and VISN 11. So we used to be VISN 11.
What is that?
You may not have known that. It stands for Veterans Integrated Service Network.
Okay.
And it's sort of how the VHA, the healthcare side of the VA, is organized. So they're organized into all these different VISNs, which means that if you're like me and you get care at the Toledo CBAC, but you belong to the Ann Arbor VA Health System, and Ann Arbor VA Health System used to be a part of something called VISN 11, which covered the lower part of Michigan and part of Ohio and a little bit of Indiana.
Now I gotcha.
Yep.
So they combined into a bigger area?
Yes. So they combined with VISN 10, which was Ohio and Indiana. So it's now the lower part of Michigan. The UP is a different VISN, just to make things complicated, and then Ohio and Indiana.
Okay. So you lost some funding.
We did. We lost some funding. We still have a few sources of funding, and we're actually really optimistic. We've put in some funding from some other foundations, and we think that's going to come through for us. But in the meantime, we are struggling a little bit. So
okay. So we've decided that we're going to try and raise some money. And how are you going to do that?
So this actually came to us through the University of Michigan Development Office. One of our contacts there asked if we'd ever considered a crowdfunding initiative. And at the time, I always thought of crowdfunding as something people bothered me with on social media. I didn't really understand what it was for. And so the more we sit down and talk with them, they explained to us that the way this works is we kind of put our cause out there and we send it out to our networks, and all of our volunteers would send it out to their networks. And it's called peer-to-peer fundraising as opposed to just crowdfunding. And so what we're doing is we've started a 4-week campaign, and we're asking that, if anybody would be willing to make a donation to our program, or just wants to learn more about our program, they can go and they can look at our website. The University of Michigan was kind enough to help us make a video, which I'm really excited about, that people can watch
that
on that page.
Very cool. Very, very cool.
I was very excited with the way that turned out. And then if people, are interested in making a donation, we sure would appreciate it. We're looking for sort of bridge funding just until we can, we applied for grants from other foundations. It's just those things happen in cycles. And so we're hoping to come up with some money in the meantime.
And so if I wanted to make a donation, how do I go about doing that?
So we have an online page. It's at friends.umich.edu/buddy-to-buddy. And the buddy to buddy has dashes in it. So it's friends.umich.edu/buddy-to-buddy.
Okay. Got that, I think.
Or if you're like me, you can just go to Google and look up buddy to buddy, and the buddy to buddy webpage will come up, and then there's a link on there to get into
right.
That
That's
page.
What I would suggest. That people, is there a phone number where they could call if they wanted to talk to you directly or they wanted to find out more information?
Absolutely. In fact, I would encourage any veteran, if you're interested in volunteering, if you have any kind of situation in your life where you want to just find out if you're eligible for benefits, want to be paired up with a volunteer, or if you're interested in making a donation, our 1-800 number is 1-888-82-BUDDY. And I'm really bad at those sort of alphanumeric things. So it's 1-888-822-8339. And if you give us a call at that number, if we don't answer, please leave a message. We will call you back. If you don't leave a message, we actually can't call you back. It's, a violation of privacy. And we can tell you more about it and tell you more about the program. And certainly if you're a Coast Guard veteran out there and you want to get involved, and in fact, most of our volunteers actually go to drill with the Michigan Army National Guard. So if you're interested in getting involved with the younger veterans or you want to work in your local community, gosh, we'd love to get a Coast Guard volunteer in the program.
Well, I think that sounds really kind of cool. And so if I wanted to volunteer, what's the process I need to go through?
So you can give us a call right at that number, or you can go to www.buddytobuddy.org. And when you go to that website, on the top right-hand corner, there's a volunteer application. You just fill that out, and someone from our organization will give you a call back. We usually call back pretty quick because we're really excited to get new volunteers. And then you go through an 8-hour training course where we talk about all the different resources that are out there and sort of how the whole program works and how the structure works. And you have to be able to pass a background check. Now, it's not a military, like, security clearance.
All right.
It's pretty simple. And so long as you can do that, if you're interested, you can go to drill and with a reserve unit or in a National Guard armory. Get to know the returning soldiers and help them out, help connect them into resources. We also have volunteers that actually just work in their local communities. So their volunteer job is actually just to look for veterans. And this kind of always cracks me up when I talk about it, because the academics at the University of Michigan, who are phenomenal people, always look at me and say, really, that works? But yes, really, we put volunteers out there and they run into veterans at Meijer and they run into them at Kroger and they run into them getting their hair cut. And, you know, maybe it's that we see a haircut or a tattoo or something and just say, hey, have you served? And then, you know, through that conversation with them, try and find out if there's anything we can help them with.
Cool. Yeah. That's, I hadn't thought about that one. So let's go back quickly. We need to raise some money, so we need to go to the to your Buddy to Buddy website, which is, you can just, as she said, go into Google, put Buddy to Buddy in there, and the first one that pops up, at least locally, is Buddy to Buddy in Michigan, and click on there, click on donate, and it will take you into the program so that you can make your donation. I see that you're asking for a fairly large amount of money, but we need to, and you've raised some too, which is great, because there's a running total here, and there's also some names of people that have donated. I'm sure you can donate anonymously if you'd like to. There's nothing that says that your name has to go out there. And you get to watch this a really cool video. I wish you could see it. So I do it. Do it. Yeah, that's my lesson of the day. Just go out there and do it and check it out, because they could really use your assistance.
And if I could just put it out there, we have four different teams through this fundraising campaign, and Team Air Force has pulled ahead significantly. So you can go in there and make a donation under your branch of service. And I will say Team Air Force is ahead by quite a bit. Trailing behind it is the Army and then the Navy, and no one from the Marine Corps quite stepped up yet. So I'm just going to put that out there.
A direct challenge to all you branches out there to get on your horse and raise some money. Stephanie, thank you very much for being on the program, and we'll be talking more in the future.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on today.
Thank you. And we're going to take a quick break for the news, and we'll be back with the Military Order of the Purple Heart. Stand by. And we're back on Veterans Radio with our little Marine theme there. And the reason for that is, I don't know, I just like to listen to all these different themes for the different branches of the service. Stephanie has gone from the Buddy to Buddy program, and we just wanted to quickly point out to everybody that we have talked about this on the program before, that there's a program similar to Buddy Buddy in Australia called Mate to Mate. And so we're trying to figure out how she could be sent to Australia to check out that program. She doesn't think that'd be able to come up with the funding, but maybe that'll be part of the deal. So we're going to try and do that. Right now we're going to be talking about the Military Order of the Purple Heart. And joining me on the line is John Kwiatkowski. I want to make sure I pronounce that right. John, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you, Dale, for this opportunity to speak for my organization, the Military Order of the Purple Heart. Here in Connecticut, as I speak, I have 178 members, and a lot of them, including myself, run into the thing that people never heard of us, unlike the VFW, the American Legion, the Elks Club, all the rest. So when they see us, they go, well, we don't understand. I said, well, the one thing that you must know, in order to wear the Purple Heart, you must have been wounded in combat, and that's what gives us the specialty of being separate from everyone else. We have bled on foreign shore. And that being said, I mean, this goes back, our medal goes back to when it was just called the Medal of Merit and was decorated by George Washington back in 1783. And over the years, it become the Army actually gets the credit, even though I'm a Marine. The Army gets the credit for the current day Purple Heart Medal. They designed it in the 30s, and it was then recognized by Congress.
Right. And it is kind of cool, and thank you for acknowledging that the Army does exist, because I know sometimes I talk to the Marines, and you would think that there's nobody else around out there. And without the Marines, I think in a lot of cases, there wouldn't be a whole lot of people out there because you guys are the spear, the head of the spear all the time. And we really are, all of us that are in the military have this mutual admiration society, I think, for everybody that has signed up to be in the military and to, you know, to put their life on the line for our country. And we got to remember that, not just for the people with the Purple Hearts, but the people that didn't get wounded, which thankfully we are, the numbers are much higher for those that did not. And John, I wanted to ask you about the, you know, you were talking a little bit about the history of the Purple Heart here, and I wanted to remind people that if they want to know more information about how the badge of military merit came about, they can go to the purpleheart.org website, and there's a whole history in there of the Purple Heart, going back to George Washington and what it was for, and how it has evolved over the years, and how it's becoming even more and more important, especially to your organization, it sounds like, in Connecticut, because you're kind of taking the lead as to what the Military Order of the Purple Heart can do.
Yes, and I'm glad you led that like that, because we stand behind all the ROTC programs, both in college and high school.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things. We work closely with the commissioner here in Connecticut and the governor in eradicating the homeless here in Connecticut, which was a big chore in getting our veterans off the street. You need not be a Purple Heart recipient for us to help you.
Right.
And that's what we try to let everybody know. They all want to, we can't go there. That, yes, you can. We have calls from mothers who have sons and daughters overseas and want to talk to somebody. Just say, well, okay, what is your biggest fear? Well, now in this day of electronics, they don't always, they anticipate a call almost like every hour,
mm-hmm.
or an email every hour. And then during my day, it was snail mail, so to speak. So the electronics is nice, but it also puts a burden on both the recipient, whether it be a wife or a husband or a daughter, and the sender,
mm-hmm.
to see that anguish as they're trying to let them know that they're safe. I'm here today. So we sit a lot on helping the families understand, for they are the unsung heroes today.
Right, that's very true. There aren't a whole lot of programs out there for the caregivers and the families that are at home.
Mm-hmm. So that's why I wanted to let the public know that, yes, there is another organization out there. And you don't have to be a member to get help from us.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have buildings of our own, so to speak, like the VFW and the rest. We usually rent space from the Elks or the VFW. All our money that we collect in raising donations goes right back to the veterans. Just a couple of 2 months ago, we had a call from a veteran who was not a member, but he was in, kind of straight. He had 4 kids, very low-paying job, and his well went out.
Okay.
Well, say 48 hours, it was up and running again. And he just couldn't believe it. I said, hey, that's what we're here for. You served. You earned it. And that's what we're about. And I really enjoy being a member. It's my second year as a commander, I reelected mm-hmm. for a second term. And I got to say this. This organization was founded by a World War One veteran in Connecticut. It was Frank Kushner. He was a Marine wounded and gassed in France. He was the forefront of getting it established here in Connecticut. The boundaries went from there to World War II veterans were the icons of the Military Order of the Purple Heart here in Connecticut. Although now we have members from World War II right up to Afghanistan in joining our organization. And the membership is $50 for a lifetime membership. And if they so choose, they can get one of those nice little Purple Heart plates from the state of Connecticut for $10, which is way below the cost of the normal plate for Connecticut.
Right, and for our audience that's around the country, there are other states that do the same thing. I know here in Michigan that you can get a Purple Heart license plate for a much lower cost. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all you got to do is, you know, bring out your DD-214 and then show them that you're entitled to it. I was looking at the website for the Military Order of the Purple Heart, John, and I wanted to ask you about some of the other programs that you've got going here, like the Americanism program.
Right. That's one of our big ones that we get out there and help both new people that in our country and also explain it to our kids in school what the American background is all about, how it was established, how the states were established, the different wars, the Constitution, and the rights in which you have as being in this United States of America. So that's a big learning thing that we try to get into the schools. We do visit high schools primarily on Veterans Day. We're invited to speak to the students, and we're broken down into different rooms for, like, World War II vets, Korean vets, Vietnam vets, and that. And the kids get a chance to go to each room and speak to the person or persons in the room and what was their actions during their, like, World War II vets, Vietnam vets. And we give them a little culture. We don't go gory details. Like me, when I did my Vietnam thing, I explained the culture of the people, the religion of the people, and how, unlike Stop and Shop, if one wanted pork, they traded chickens.
True.
So it's a very good thing. And I get a lot of satisfaction knowing that there are kids out there in high schools and actually college. They're actually interested in learning a little bit about America and its history and the foundation and all the rights that they enjoy today. I know if some people watch a show on TV, they'll see that college or high school kids are asked questions, and they just stand there and go, I don't know. So that's one of the things our organization is trying to bring back into the forefront.
I think that's something that a lot of veterans are trying to do across the country, is to help people understand why they served, what, you know, whatever their particular conflict was, and why we did that. You know, what was it that was so important? And I'm looking at the page on the Americanism program on the Military Order Purple Heart website, purpleheart.org, and you've got the lyrics for America the Beautiful, which is our favorite song. You've got God Bless America on there. You've got you can print off the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, Star-Spangled Banner, the Pledge of Allegiance, all of these different things that are going to help people understand why people join the military even today. We talk to our young veterans who we've had on Veterans Radio, and their reasons for joining are the same as ours were 40 years ago, 70 years ago, 230 years ago. You know, we've got a really unusual country here, and we need to protect it, and we need to defend it, and we need to let people know that, you know, why it is so special.
And the care for our veterans, now today, I'm speaking as a Vietnam veteran, but now today, the younger veterans coming back have a stamp put on them. It's called PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yes, it has to be addressed. But it's getting so that employers out there are saying, gee, I don't know, should I hire a vet? We represent the vets in that respect. If an employer wants to call any military organization and have questions, I'm very proud of Yale University here in Connecticut, who started the Yale Veteran Network, and they deal with that in both hiring, education, and explaining what it is that the stigma of PTSD is being placed on our young veterans, and that's only adding to their problems when they can't get a job.
Well, it is true, and I think many of us can relate to the idea of people having a certain stereotypic view of what a veteran is like. But, you know, it's not like we all walk around with a big V on our forehead and whine about what we can't and can't do. And I think everybody's got the idea that that's what goes on sometimes. And it's not. All these men and women are fighting. You know, they're fighting for their lives. They're fighting for their families. They're fighting for their own kids. I just had somebody in the studio a little bit ago. She's got two young boys right now. And, you know, that's why she was in the service, why her husband was in the service. And this is why they do it. It's a good organization, folks. And, some of the skills that we learned in there might be really good for the general population out there someday. And you just kind of, you never know. But, in talking to people like General Motors, and they look for veterans. Many of these employers are looking for veterans to hire because they know that we, as a group, you know, we know how to follow orders. We know how to act in an emergency. We know how, we're respectful of everyone, and we're on time.
We take pride in what we do.
Yeah, and we take pride in our work. So, John, what else is going on in Connecticut that we need to know? I want to thank you especially for being on our program, and I hope that Elliot is feeling better. Would put me in touch with you.
I am very appreciative of Elliot, and he is getting a little bit better, even though he had a serious spell there for a little bit.
Yeah, it sounds like it. We're talking about Elliot Storm, who wrote a book called These Scars Are Sacred. If you look back in the archives of Veterans Radio, you look up These Scars Are Sacred. He's been on our program a few times, and he's very proud of the people in Connecticut. And it sounds like Connecticut is doing a great job. If you've got no homeless veterans out there, that's amazing. And
that I can't say enough. And how the governor, the commissioner of Veterans Affairs, Sean Connolly, and all the veterans organization grouped together and put their back into it. And I'm very proud of that.
Well, you should be, John, and we're very proud of having you on our program, and I want to thank you so much for being on Veterans Radio, and we'll be talking again to see what else is going on in Connecticut.
Thank you, Dale. Thank you very much.
Okie dokie.
Bye.
Thanks, John. All right, we've been just talking about the Purple Heart organization here, so you can go to purpleheart.org and find out more about what the Military Order of the Purple Heart is. Also, the history of the Purple Heart, which is very interesting. Because as John pointed out, it started off way back with George Washington as a way to honor the men who were serving in the Continental Army. I think that stuff is kind of fascinating. I think it's kind of interesting for us to all know this. So spread the word. Military Order of the Purple Heart. We're going to take a real quick break, and then we're going to be back, and we're going to be talking about submarines. So stay tuned. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and our guest is standing at attention and saluting because he's a Navy veteran. And so we're real pleased to have John Schemmel on our program today. John is a student at the Spex Howard School of Broadcasting up in, where is that?
In Southfield, Michigan.
Southfield, Michigan, okay. And he's also a student of radio, TV, and all those other different kinds of communication skills. So John is going to be doing some programming for us, we're hoping, in the future, a little technical stuff, maybe a little research, a little corresponding, and then maybe you'll get him on the air because there's only three of us, and, you know, we need to have all these correspondents. We want to be a big, news-worthy organization, so we're going to start doing that. So, John, I want to welcome you to Veterans Radio.
Thank you so much for having me, Dale.
All right, so tell me about your time in the Navy and why you joined and where you joined and what happened.
Well, it took me a while to decide. I actually wanted to be a Marine when I first started, and I kind of got talked out of it by someone, and they told me to kind of take a look at the Navy with the training that was out there. Went to the recruiting office, and they were going to try to get me to go through the nuclear power program with that, and wasn't too sure about that. I decided to go with the electronics, which at the time was the advanced electronics program. So I was in schooling for approximately 2.5 years before I actually served aboard a nuclear submarine at that time. So
you were on a submarine.
I was on a submarine. It's called.
I get claustrophobic outside sometimes. Tell me about the submarine. What What type were they, and what was your job on there?
Well, there's two types of submarines now in modern times. There's a ballistic missile submarine. It's called an SSBN. And there's a fast-attack nuclear submarine. I served on a fast-attack nuclear submarine. Classification was a 637-class Sturgeon-class submarine is what I served on.
Sturgeon like the fish in Lake Michigan?
Absolutely, just like that fish.
Okay, all right. So tell me about what it was like to be inside this small area.
Well, it's pretty daunting when you first report aboard a submarine. There's wires and piping everywhere. There's an initiation process that you have to go through. And for qualifications, you need to know pretty much a backup of every system. That you get a little indoctrination on each job on the submarine, just in case something might happen, you'd be able to step in and kind of work with that. Of course, damage control is extremely important. With that, we had plenty of drills. And the studying process takes approximately anywhere from 8 to 12 months to qualify aboard a nuclear submarine. And with that process, you get what's called your dolphins, which means you're qualified on submarines and able, you kind of proved yourself along that process. So, my job on the submarine, which is called a sonar technician, which means we wear the headphones basically like we're wearing right now, and we listen to other types of surface ships and submarines, and we got to hear whales and snapping shrimp and dolphins as well.
Snapping shrimp?
Snapping shrimp. They sound just like your finger snapping.
Really?
So, yeah.
So what's the deepest you've ever been?
In excess of 400 feet.
Is it like the movies? Do they make noises when they get down so deep?
Yes, you hear a little bit of creaking a little bit. And, you know, we used to tie a string across our sonar room, and you could see, like, the pressure. The pressure would move in with the string based on the outside pressure. And it used to be kind of a tight pressure, and then it would kind of loosen up as you would go and change in depths.
Could you feel that in your ears or anything in your body?
A little bit. More, you know, sometimes the pressure changes in your ears.
And how fast would they go up from there, or how fast could they get to the surface?
Depending on the evolution, we used to call, like, we would do things called angles and dangles, and then we would do another operation called an emergency blow, which is in case of something happening. We had 4,500 pounds of air that we could blast through the ballast tanks, and we'd rise through the surface. And actually, the submarine, as it broaches the surface, it almost comes out of the water, and it'll slam back down. So I wish I kind of had a visual for you, but you can actually look it up.
Well, you gave me a good visual because we're on radio.
So, yeah, just trying to explain it.
So you come flying out of the water.
Flying out of the water, and it's a pretty neat evolution when you're practicing it. But that's one way that you can come from a certain level in an emergency, you know, is get rid of that water from the ballast tanks, and you do what's called an emergency blow.
Was that something that I'm assuming they would practice that periodically?
We would definitely practice that quite a bit. So,
what was the longest time period you were ever in length under the water?
Well, we did. We were out in the Mediterranean, and the longest that we were on station, basically under the water, without coming to a land, was about 71 days.
My partner Bob always wants to know these questions. Sanitation-wise, how often did you take a shower? How long could you take a shower? Was it restricted or what?
It was fairly restricted. Basically, how we took a shower is you basically would turn on the water, wet yourself a little bit, and then turn off the water, lather yourself up, do a quick rinse, and you're out.
And probably what we should do at home to save water.
So it was really quick as far as the showers were concerned. So you wanted to conserve water.
How many men and women were on a submarine?
For our boat, it was approximately 120.
That's a lot, seems like.
But not at one time, because a lot of times we're doing different evolutions. People would be in port doing training and whatnot. So.
Okay. So, join the Navy and see the world. Where did you get to go?
Puerto Rico and Roosevelt Roads, Puerto Rico. We were in St. John, St. Croix. Went to Halifax, Nova Scotia. Over in the Mediterranean, we're in Haifa, Israel. We went to Toulon, France, La Maddalena, Italy, and Venice, Italy. Escaping me at the moment. Naples, Italy.
Okay.
So,
any missions that you can talk about? Did you sneak up on people?
That's classified information.
I see. I tried making you feel very comfortable, and people will slip stuff out.
That's why we're called the Silent Service.
Oh, that's what it is. You're also called something else.
Bubbleheads. Yes. Yep. We're called bubbleheads. So it's an affectionate term. So
a term that's used with affection.
Yeah.
I think that's very cool. How fast could a submarine go on the surface nowadays? And this submarine is totally nuclear, right?
We're in a nuclear submarine. If we could run off of a diesel power, and that's a lot of times when we would come up and to recycle air to get new air within because we can make our own oxygen while we're underneath.
Oh, okay.
So on a surface transit, we could go 10, 12 knots. And underneath, we could go in excess of 20 knots. So
really?
Mm-hmm.
You can move fairly quickly.
Fairly quickly. Silently.
And yes, run silent, run deep. One of my favorite movies of all time. How long is a submarine?
Ours was about 292 feet. The ballistic missile submarines are approximately 560 feet, and it depends on the class of submarine. So, approximately about 5 years ago, I took a tour of a newer Virginia-class submarine. The amount of technology, and they're a little bit bigger, and some of the capabilities they have were just absolutely blew me away compared to the submarine that I was on. So
it's amazing how fast that the technology changes, not only in your submarines, or in my case, in aircraft and so forth. It's like you go back and you say, I was on a Model T submarine in relationship to what it was. Because I think the only submarine I've ever been on, where was it? Oh, it was in Chicago at the Science and Industry Museum, I think it was there. And I decided that I didn't want to be on a submarine. It's a little too tiny.
Very tight, very classic. I think one of the things people don't realize is the amount of piping and wiring and really how close and tight a quarters are that we live in on a submarine. So, but it's amazing the camaraderie that you have, at least on my submarine that I served on. It was amazing. We still keep in touch today on social media, and we have reunions every few years. So it's a really neat thing, after 20 plus years,
Well, that's one of the things we always talk about here on Veterans Radio, John, is the idea of the camaraderie, the things that we don't forget and the people that we don't forget. Who we stay in contact for, as you said, 20 years, in my case, 40 years. I was talking to a World War II veteran last week, and he's still got some friends that are around, and that's 70 years. And that's what's really important, I think, for people to understand is how close we do become, how dependent we become on it. As you mentioned earlier, the idea that you had to know all the different jobs in case something happened. Worst case scenario was, probably the worst case scenario would be that you end up piloting the submarine around. Did they ever let you do that?
Usually, well, the newer class submarines, they have the chiefs and officers will dive and drive the boats is what we call. When I was in, at least at the Sturgeon class submarines, more of the junior guys would dive and drive, as we call it, the helmsmen and planesmen. So it's changed. A lot of things have changed since the time frame that I've been in, so.
When were you in the service?
I was in from 1989 to 1994. So.
Okay, that's a while ago.
While ago.
So we got about 2 minutes.
Okay.
Of getting the signs over there. So what is it that inspired you to go back to Specs Howard or to get involved in this radio stuff?
It's one of the things that I've always wanted to do, actually, ever since I was in high school. When I got out of the service, I thought I was going to do it. I did a little broadcasting on the side, doing some play-by-play for football, for the high school football teams, and I got kind of nervous. So actually, it was a little bit of a nudging from my girlfriend that got me to go back into Specs Howard, and I absolutely love it. So something that I'd like to do for the rest of my career. So,
well, we're hoping that we can work out something here, John, here on Veterans Radio, and I look forward to you putting together some stories for us and maybe helping us out a little bit with our technology, since, you're 20 years younger than we are or more, and that maybe we can figure out how to work all this stuff.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Dale.
Okay. Thank you, John. Well, you'll be meeting John again probably somewhere down the line. We're coming up to the end of the hour, and I want to thank all of you for tuning in today. I want to thank Legal Help for Veterans for their sponsorship. By the way, if you'd like to be a sponsor of Veterans Radio, we've got a pretty captive audience out there. You got a little over 22 million veterans in America. That's kind of a niche, as we say, but we are always looking for people that want to sponsor Veterans Radio. You can get a hold of us at 734-646-8255. 8673. You can follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, go to our archives, go to our podcasts. Jim Falzone will be here next week, and he's got some really kind of a expose type of information about the VA and their plans for the healthcare system. So I encourage you to tune in then. And until next week, you are dismissed.